Welcome to the Borderless Podcast, your guide to traveling, investing, and living beyond borders, where we talk about living the life that you want to live, where you want to live it. From beautiful San Miguel de Allende, smack in the middle of Mexico. With your hosts, Jonathan Lockwood and James Guzman.
Welcome to the Borderless Podcast, traveling, investing, and living beyond borders, the podcast that's all about helping you brainstorm through your borders. If something's keeping you from the life you really want, we're on it. We're coming to you from the Borderless compound in what is frequently voted one of the best cities in the world, San Miguel de Allende, right in the heart of Mexico. My name's Jonathan Lockwood, and I'm here with James Guzman. Hey, James.
Hey, how's it going?
You just remarked here that the weather just keeps rolling out beautifully.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. I went out last night and joined you and a couple of our friends for cigars and drinks last night. And usually, at least in the evening, even in the summer, sometimes it can get a little chilly late in the evening, but I didn't need that jacket I wore.
No, absolutely. It was great. And yeah, I was out there. It was my mom's birthday as well, and we went to this mask museum. Really cool. All these masks from all over Mexico, all the indigenous cultures and all this stuff. It was like this guy had 400 masks in his house. It was incredible.
Wow.
Yeah, no, I'd recommend going and check that out.
Cool.
But very interesting.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Well, our guest today is D.R. Feidler of Brainstorm Every Day. D.R. Feidler has worked as an editor, college professor, educational consultant, and the director of a humanities center. He studied ancient Greek philosophy and Mediterranean religions at the University of Pennsylvania and holds a Ph.D. in philosophy and the history of science and cosmology. Through his work, he has attempted to build bridges between the world of learning and contemporary life. He's also the owner of Concord Editorial and Design, which provides design, production, and book packaging services, and the creator of Brainstorm Every Day, create your own opportunities, design, and live your ideal lifestyle. But we found David's article a while back entitled How I Worked from Europe for 9 Months While All of My Clients Thought I Was Still Living in the United States, and thought his story would make a great Borderless Podcast interview. Welcome, Dave D.R. Feidler of the Brainstorm Every Day to the Borderless Podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
So, D.R., we have to ask you, your motivation for relocating, which is in Sarajevo, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep, I live in Sarajevo.
And that's the capital of Bosnia, correct?
Yes, it is.
And just for the benefit of our listeners, just help us understand where that is in Eastern Europe.
Well, we're right to the east of Croatia and to the south of Austria.
Okay. And it looks like you're just right across the water from Italy, right?
Right. We were on vacation in Croatia actually last week, and that's the Adriatic Sea. So we're right across from Italy. And Bosnia, it's a very small, heart-shaped country. And actually, one of the things that makes this place so interesting, one of the things that drew me here, is that it's actually a meeting point between different cultures in the world. And it was, at one point, the northern boundary of the Ottoman Empire, the southern boundary of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the western boundary of the Catholic Church and, or I'm sorry, the eastern boundary of the Catholic Church and the western boundary of the Eastern Orthodox Church. So you have all of these different religious traditions that met here.
Well, plenty of stuff for a guy like you with the degrees you have to stay interested.
Yeah, that was one of the things that drew me here.
Okay. Now, it looks like in reading through your story, your motivation to move to Sarajevo, to relocate your business and your life and everything, basically had to do with that's where your woman was. Is that right?
Yes, I fell in love with someone. And the story behind it is that I have a lot of strange interests, or I should say specialized interests. And a few years ago, I made a friend on Facebook whose name was Farasha. And Farasha is a very interesting person, and she studied philosophy and religion and all sorts of things. And she happened to be living here, and she started posting all of these photographs on Facebook of scenes and architecture from Sarajevo. And I became very, very interested in it. And I started making friends with people that she knew on Facebook as well and learning about the city. And I was just getting tired of living in Michigan. I had lived there all of my life. And the more I researched Sarajevo, the more I found it to be interesting. So I ended up coming here to visit to see what it was like. And after I was here for about a week, I was sold on moving here.
When did that happen? What day, what year was that?
It was about 5 years ago. Okay. And it was actually, yeah, it was almost exactly 5 years ago because I first came here in December. So the middle of, you know, this coming December will be, I think, the 5 year anniversary of when I first came here. And Farasha introduced, actually, I became friends with my future wife online before I came here, Elmira. And she showed me around the city when I was here. I stayed for about 2.5 or 3 weeks, I think.
The thing that I identified with from the article that you wrote, and for me, I moved initially in 2005, so it was about 10 years ago, and that was to California from Michigan. We're a couple of Michiganders.
Right.
And I did that, and even more 10 years ago, unlike today, a lot of the guests that we interview don't seem to have any apprehension about this, or not much anyway. There was a time when the idea of relocating your business might be potentially distressing to your clients, right?
Yes. Well, when I was very young, when I was 24, I started a publishing business, and I ran that publishing business for 20 years and eventually sold it. And then after that, I started this company called Concord Editorial and Design that creates books for publishers, which is actually a better business to be in than book publishing. It's a lot less stressful. And so I created this business in Michigan with the exact idea that it would be a location independent business, because after I sold my publishing company, there just weren't any jobs in West Michigan for someone with my skills. The economy was very, very bad. And I wanted to have a business where I could, you know, have clients that worked anywhere, you know, in the United States. So I started off with the intention of specifically creating this location independent business 10 years ago. And then about 7 years ago, you know, the famous book by Tim Ferriss came out, The 4-Hour Workweek, and I started reading that. And I started getting ideas from that, that actually, you know, I could go somewhere else and live. And since I had already created a location independent business, I could take that with me.
That's an exciting thing, isn't it? I remember when that occurred to me.
Yes. And I was looking around for places to go. I thought about going to Argentina, and I thought about going to Athens in Greece. And then I started making these connections in Sarajevo, and I was very attracted to the beauty of the city. The architecture here is really unbelievable. And I was attracted by the extremely low cost of living, which is much less than the United States. I would have loved to have lived in California like you, but the cost of living there is just too high, you know, like in the Bay Area or whatever. And so I came here to check it out, and I fell in love with the city. And I decided that when, you know, upon my return to Michigan, what I would do is basically put my house on the market and return here as soon as possible, which is what I did.
All right. Hey, you know, David, I want to ask you about maybe something that you haven't written about. But so when you met your wife now, you said she. I'm always interested in how these things happen, because I think, you know, as far as you know, we're used to getting everything online and how that works for digital nomads as far as dating and that kind of stuff. So you were on Facebook and she just friended you?
We met through our mutual friend Farasha, and we had a lot of interests in common. So, you know, that was one of the things that drew me here as well, is that there were people with similar interests here that, you know, I couldn't really find in West Michigan. I wasn't really getting enough intellectual stimulation there. And yeah. It was very beautiful there, and I had one very, very good friend who's, you know, obviously still a friend of mine, and we talk on the phone, but I felt like I was just dying there, really.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's great, but so she friended you, you started chatting, and then how long did that take until you just said, oh, well, I'm gonna go fly all the way over there to see this girl?
I'm not really sure because I was communicating with, you know, different people here in Sarajevo, and I was already making plans to visit here.
Oh, okay.
You know, regardless of, you know, Elmira, I was planning on coming here to, you know, check it out.
Got it. Okay. So then, you know, like the post that we reposted, you know, it, for the first, what was it, 8 months or so, you were living and working in Sarajevo, but you, at least on your website, it still said that you were in Michigan.
Well, what I did is when I first came here, I was here for about 3 weeks and I continued to work here, and none of my clients knew that I was, you know, anywhere else in the world. And the thing is that with the kind of business that I have, it doesn't really matter because really at that point I was talking on average to, you know, my clients on the telephone, like maybe once a year, if that. And now I don't even do that. Everything is by email. And so I can really work anywhere. And I mean, they didn't really, I mean, they had no idea that I was here. And what I did is I was a little worried about, you know, telling them that I was moving here because I didn't want them to worry about, you know, anything happening or the quality of work that I would be producing, or, you know, they're just being, I didn't want them to worry about, you know, there being any trouble. So I made a conscious decision not to tell, you know, any of my clients that I had moved to Sarajevo until after I had been here for 9 months, because I knew that if I worked here for 9 months and, you know, produced all of the projects that I normally did and there were no problems at all, which there weren't, that really no one would have anything to complain about. The other thing, too, is that in the publishing industry, I produce books primarily for university presses. And in the publishing industry, there has been outsourcing going on for a very, very long time. And for example, like a lot of the books published in the U.S. are actually outsourced to India. And so the idea of someone working remotely or outsourcing work is not an unusual idea in the publishing industry. So what I just ended up doing was outsourcing myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's great. And you're taking advantage of geo arbitrage, which you've also written about. Would you mind expanding, maybe going into detail about what geo arbitrage is and how you are taking advantage of that now?
Right. Well, basically, I learned about geo arbitrage from reading the 4-Hour Workweek, and there are two different forms of it. And one is that you can outsource work to countries where labor is less expensive. And I experimented a little bit with that. But the other way of using geo arbitrage is basically to outsource yourself. And for example, I have an income from the U.S., but I live in a place where the cost of living is, you know, maybe like 40 or, you know, 50% less than the United States. So, you know, since I moved here, the quality of, you know, my life has actually gone up substantially because I had a very nice home in Michigan. It was in the country. It was a Victorian farmhouse. And I woke up every morning to beautiful views. But frankly, it was very, very hard for me to save money there. And now that I've moved to Sarajevo, you know, what I earn goes much farther and it's much easier for me to save money. And the cost of everything is, you know, just in general, you know, so much less here.
You know, I was looking at your article in which you talked about some of the special tools you needed to run a U.S.-based company effectively from overseas. The first one was a regular telephone number in the U.S. that would ring through to Sarajevo. How did you accomplish that, DR?
Well, actually, that's a lot of people don't know about this, but it's called a Skype N number, and it's just something that you get from Skype, and you can get a telephone number basically in any area code in the United States, and someone can just call that number, and it will ring through to your, you know, Skype connection on, you know, your computer, wherever you are in the world, and people can leave voicemail. So really people can't even tell that, you know, you're not in the United States. I've had a lot of people call me from West Michigan and they think that I'm, you know, located still in that area.
Mm-hmm. And the good news is there's, in the last 5 years, there are even more ways to do that, aren't there?
Yes. Skype is pretty reliable and it's nice because people can leave, you know, voicemails. And I actually talk to very few people on the phone, but it also allows you to make outgoing calls in the United States from a number, and that number will show up when you're calling someone. The other tool that really helped me immensely was Earth Class Mail, and that's a service that receives your mail for you, and then they open your mail and scan it. And they have also a feature that you can use that automatically deposits your checks into your banking account in the United States. And I found that to be invaluable. So before I left the United States, what I did was I basically changed my mailing address to Beaverton, Oregon, where, you know, there's an Earth Class Mail facility. They have them all across the country, but I think that was the least expensive one. That's where they're actually based. And so basically, every time I get a piece of mail, they send me a photograph via email showing the exterior of the envelope, and you just press a button and it scans it. And if there's a check in the envelope, then they automatically scan the check and deposit it for you. And that has really helped me a lot in terms of running my business from overseas.
Yeah, that's a great service. And there's all kinds of services like that. And, you know, they're kind of expanding this market. And they have ones that you can set up pretty much a virtual office there. They have people that will answer the phone for you and stuff. It actually looks like you have an office there. Also, there are places that will do drop shipping for you. So you can store stuff there, and they will mail out things from your website and things like that. So there's a lot of...
Great.
Yeah. And then also they have these types of services set up in different countries. All over the world. So, you know, depending on how you're set up, and, you know, some people like to use these strategically as kind of their residence or something like that for tax purposes. So it's definitely something to consider when you're living a digital nomad type lifestyle.
Right. I was talking with someone the other day, and they were skeptical about the 4-hour work week and how could Tim Ferriss do that and everything like that. And I actually experienced a bit of that myself. You know, in a previous time when I owned my book publishing company, because there was a certain point where I restructured the business, and I had like 2 employees that I got rid of, and I had warehouse space that I got rid of, and I had offices that I got rid of. And what I did was I sent all of my inventory to a fulfillment service on the other side of Michigan, and they basically took all of the orders via an 800 number. They took orders over the web. And basically, they would fulfill all of the orders. And I produced maybe like 2 books a year. I was actually working on my PhD then. And at the end of every month, I would just get a check from them in the mail. And it was really fantastic. I would say that those were probably the 2 happiest years of my life, because I was just doing research and reading and doing a little bit of work, and I would just get a check in the mail at the end of each month. So it is possible, and especially if you own a product-based business, you know, then it becomes, you know, much easier to have a business like that that's totally automated.
Yeah, absolutely. So now that you've made this transition, you're there for, you know, 5 years now, how would you describe the, you know, the difference in your life, how, you know, the emotionally and just, you know, what type of life that you're able to live now compared to what you were in Michigan?
Oh, well, I would say that I'm, my level of happiness is higher, and we've been married for, I don't know, a few years now. And my wife and I, we have a 2.5-year-old son. Oh. And that's very fun. That's a new experience for me. And he's really wonderful and playful. And I would just say that the overall quality of my life is better. And I love, we live in the very, very old historic part of town. And I love like walking down the hill into the old part of the city and walking by these old houses with, you know, Turkish architecture. And there's no aluminum siding or vinyl siding here. So, which is something that I never really liked living in the United States. You know, it's very prevalent, but everything here is, you know, made out of stone or has really nice, you know, stone facades. And there's a lot of architecture from the Austro-Hungarian period. So you don't need a car to live here. When I went back to Michigan a couple of years ago to work on my taxes, I had a short business trip there. I just didn't feel at home there anymore because I stayed in this hotel on this very, very busy street along which were, you know, this huge rows of, you know, big box retailers. And you need a car to get everywhere. And here I'm surrounded by the mountains. It felt really strange to be back somewhere that was so flat and having to drive somewhere. And I just didn't really feel at home there anymore.
Yeah.
It just, it's like, it's more suited to human life, you know, living here.
Mm. Yeah, I get that. I go back to Michigan once in a great while. And, you know, you come from the nice side of Michigan, the west side. I was over on the east side, even more irritating or depressing. Although I love my friends in Michigan, and I love a lot of people there in Michigan. And, you know, it's great to go back there for winter and see all that beautiful snow, too. But I wanted to say, David, you had this idea. You built the business many years in advance to be location independent. Some years passed. You planned it out. You made it happen. And then 9 months passed there in Sarajevo. Everything was going swimmingly. You were happy. And then you decided to tell your clients. How did that go?
Well, it went really well. Of course, I didn't know how it would go. And, you know, to be quite honest with you, I was quite afraid of how they might react. So what I did was I wrote a very, very carefully written email to them to explain, you know, the situation. And I think this was actually before my household. But in any case, I wrote them this email just explaining the situation. And I explained to them why I didn't tell them in the earlier that I had moved here, because I didn't want them to worry. And I just wanted them to see that there wouldn't be any problems at all. And I have to say that was the most carefully worded email I've ever written in my entire life.
Yeah.
And I was shocked by the response, because people were actually happy for me. No one was concerned about it at all. And in fact, I got several emails where people were congratulating me on, you know, doing such a brilliant thing and how happy they were for me. So there was, in retrospect, there was nothing to worry about.
Yeah, I love that. I love to hear your story, because I've been surrounded by people for years who don't seem to have that concern that you and I both had. You know, I was worried, what are they going to say? Well, I told a couple of my bigger clients I was doing it, but the rest of them, I didn't say anything. I moved to California. Now I'm in Mexico, but I was surprised at number one. Most of them are like, yeah, so is it a problem? They were not at all concerned. And then the people who I was more friendly with, they were like, really? Mexico?
Yeah.
Cool. Tell us all about it. You know, now we're Facebook friends and they're seeing all my pictures and everything. So the good news is today in so many of these areas, it just doesn't matter. And the people end up being just delighted and happy for you.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. And in fact, for example, I deal with a lot of authors, and I never mention to them the fact that I'm in Sarajevo. So most of the people that I'm working with still don't know that I'm living here. It's just really irrelevant.
Gotcha. So in a minute here, I want to talk to you about another article that you have on your website that is, let's see, it's the three elements of lifestyle design. And we want to talk to you about that, because that looks really interesting. But we need to take just a moment now and give some attention to our sponsor. Today's Borderless Podcast is brought to you by The Condescending Group, teaching you how to be morally superior. You know, our friends at The Condescending Group think there's a time and place for elevating yourself by crapping on others. And that is every time and every place. And it really is a simple recognition of the fact that in today's day and age, we just don't have the time we used to. Time to effectively develop a craft or skill. Time to read all of the books that might supply wisdom. Time to work on yourself honestly as an individual. I mean, especially when you consider all the wine tastings you have to go to, all the shitty art there is to appreciate, and all the hours spent on social media sites necessary for a fulfilling life. So, given this time poverty, instead of earning one's self-esteem and influence in the world, isn't artificial self-elevation the logical choice? Go to thecondescendinggroup.com now and discover all the many ways you can fake your way into feeling wonderful about yourself. Go to thecondescendinggroup.com now. The Condescending Group, they care more than you. Okay, so we're back to the Borderless Podcast, and we're talking to D.R. Feidler from Brainstorm Every Day. And I want to ask him about his very interesting article, The Three Elements of Lifestyle Design. And I didn't complete that title because I want you to tell us, what do you consider the three elements of lifestyle design?
Well, I think the three elements are wealth, you know, which also correlates with work and freedom and meaning. And the point that I'm really trying to make in this article is the sweet spot is where wealth, freedom, and meaning intersect. So if you can get those three different spheres of your life in harmony where they're intersecting with one another, you're basically going to have an overall better life in terms of your overall happiness and in terms of you know, the sense of meaning that you experience. Because there's so many people, say for example in the United States, who spend all of their time working. And what I did in this article is I did an analysis of a lawyer who's working 60 hours per week and making $100,000 per year, compared with an entrepreneur who's working maybe 30 hours a week and only making $40,000 per year in a less expensive location. And if you look at this, the lawyer has an actual hourly rate of $32 per hour, but has no free time. And the entrepreneur working in a less expensive location would have a lower hourly rate of $26 per hour, but would have 10 to 30 hours a week of free time where they could actually do something else, like work on another business or launch another venture. But the buying power of the hourly rate based on the location could be $52. So in essence, the entrepreneur would be making more money than the lawyer, would have more buying power than the lawyer who's making $100,000 per year. And there might also be major tax benefits to living in a less expensive overseas location. So the actual amounts that people make at the moment are somewhat relative when you look at them in complete, you know, the complete context of your life.
Yeah, I love your decision to create that calculation of the buying power. And I notice you say buying power, it's much more, and you say with major tax benefits. So did you figure the tax benefits into that buying power calculation?
No.
Okay, because those major tax benefits can be really major, and that would definitely have an effect, wouldn't it?
Well, there are certainly tax benefits. I've certainly experienced a lot of tax benefits, you know, in terms of living here in Sarajevo.
Right. I mean, there's the foreign earned income exclusion, which means on the first $100,000 or so of your income, if you are, you know, if you qualify living outside of the United States, you do not pay income tax on that first $100,000 or so of your income. That's huge. And so
this
is wonderful. I mean, folks, I mean, there's this path that has been laid out for most of us in the United States, and I'm sure many other countries. And I have a friend right now from Arizona who's moved over to Austin, and yet he's being wooed to come back to his IT job in Arizona. And of course, he's looking at how much money he's making. And we're used to that. It's very logical. Oh, I was making $70,000 a year. Oh, they're going to pay me $82,000 a year. Yeah. Will you figure in these calculations? Everything changes and life gets better.
Yes. Yes. Really, I think most people in the United States don't even know about the foreign earned income exclusion, which, again, that's something I learned about from the 4-Hour Work Week, Tim Ferriss's book. So I started researching that, and I looked at the tax advantages of moving my business overseas, and they were, you know, just incredible. Because, like you said, you don't pay any federal tax on the first $100,000 of income now, and I don't pay any tax here because I'm not a citizen. I pay, you know, there's like a PDV tax that I pay, but everything is so inexpensive that, you know, the 17% PDV tax doesn't amount to anything. So really, and I'm not paying Michigan, you know, taxes anymore because I don't live in Michigan. So the only tax that I'm really paying is self-employment tax.
Mm-hmm, right.
Or Social Security.
Exactly. Right. So we've dealt with wealth from your three elements of lifestyle design. Let's talk about meaning. What do you mean about meaning in this context?
I got this idea actually from partly from Taylor Pearson's book, The End of Jobs. And he was talking about, you know, personal ramifications of being an entrepreneur. And he was talking about the relationship between entrepreneurship, freedom, and meaning. And basically, if you feel that you have more freedom in your life and that you are actually able to chart out the course of your life is inherently going to feel more meaningful. So if you can, you know, work out something in terms of the way that you, you know, generate income where you have time, freedom of, basically freedom of time, freedom of movement, mobility, and you're able to, you know, design your life is inherently going to feel more meaningful.
And of course,
rather than if you were just a wage slave, you know, working at some kind of job that you didn't like in a, you know, cubicle and you were basically throwing all that time away in your life because you were just doing the work to meet your expenses and you weren't, you know, building something that was larger than merely having a job.
Okay. So we've talked about the wealth part of it. We've talked about the meaning part of it. And all of this adds up to freedom, doesn't it? Or that's the plan anyway.
That's the plan. That's the plan. But like Tim Ferriss says, you really need to start with the end in mind in terms of when you design a business. And this is something that I did partly, but I didn't do it, you know, entirely. In retrospect, I didn't do it entirely well because, for example, I do have the freedom to work wherever I want. But the problem that I have with my job right now is that the one thing that I sell to all of my clients is quality. And I'm doing like very, very high level work in terms of quality control. And that's the main thing that I'm selling. And so I'm basically stuck doing all of that quality control myself. So it's very difficult for me to distance myself from my business and step back because I can't replace myself. So I didn't really take that into consideration 10 years ago when I started the business. And so one of the things that I'm trying to do now is I started this website, brainstormeveryday.com, and I'm starting another website as well. And I'm planning to put together some courses on how people can develop their own location-independent businesses and service businesses and things like that so that I can take all of the knowledge that I've gained over the past 10 years and pass that on to other people and create some video courses online. And my plan is to create some sources of passive income that way.
Great.
So that I'm not always selling my time for money.
Yeah, that sounds great. You know, I was going to ask you with your background and, you know, you've mentioned at the beginning of the podcast that you love to read and this type of stuff, that why you had decided not to become a professor or to teach in some way. But I guess, you know, looking at this framework that was not, I mean, how do you feel about being a professor in a regular school? Is that something that you're not interested in?
After I did my PhD, I was a professor for a year or so at a university in West Michigan, and I liked the teaching, but it was incredibly political, and I knew that the academic world was very political because I've been involved with it for many, many years, but I just didn't think it was going to be that way at the school where I was teaching, and I really don't have a stomach for that. So I like the work that I actually decided to go back into publishing. It was so bad. I like the work that I do now because basically people deliver projects to me. I do the work and I get paid, and there's no politics involved. And the other thing too is that I'm a person who's really devoted to the traditional idea of like a liberal arts education and the humanities and how the humanities and studying the liberal arts can help you, you know, flourish as a human being and things like that. And I've devoted a lot of my life to that ideal, but that ideal has really been lost in the modern educational system. And I think it's almost impossible to get that kind of education anymore. So at this point, I wouldn't even want to teach at a university because that vision has been lost. And really, I look at my 2.5-year-old son and I think, would I even really want to send him to, you know, college anymore, because there's so many other ways to learn things. And you're just not going to get that kind of, you know, traditional liberal arts education anymore.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you don't mind, let's talk about that, because we just, you know, we had a podcast, was it 4 podcasts back, I think now, but we talked about our friend Jason in town who has children that he's raising. And actually just today I was chatting with somebody about that. This, you know, it's pretty obvious that if you're able to travel, if you're living this type of location independent lifestyle, it's very, I'm sorry, it's very good for the child, especially if you can find mentors and, you know, all these experiences, traveling, meeting new people and new cultures and stuff. This is great. But they might not have the, you know, if you're not following a specific
curriculum,
then, you know, they won't have the diploma, they won't have the certificates that they might need to, if they do want to go to college, or, you know, that at least for the time being, that people think that they need in order to get a job and this type of stuff, and they might be mad at you for that or something. It's very interesting to think about how that might change just within, for instance, your child's lifetime. I think things are going to be changing very quickly, especially if this is a dramatic popping of this college bubble in the United States. And it does seem to be at a ridiculous proportion, like you're saying, the politics and all this type of stuff. So what do you think it might look like moving forward? And how would you recommend someone who's, you know, thinking about this type of lifestyle that has children, how do you think they should approach education?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not sure that I have the answer, but I was listening actually to a podcast the other day with Seth Godin on it, and he was talking about the educational system and how when kids go to college now, they're no longer taught to think it was us, Seth Godin and Brian Clark. Really, really good discussion. And if you're a bright person, I found that actually I never really got very much out of college myself. And the one thing that I did enjoy was like doing independent studies. So that was good. Mm-hmm. But actually I never finished my undergraduate degree because I just wanted to start this publishing company. I did that at the age of 24. And I would have never gone back and finished it if it wasn't for the fact that, you know, I had this fantasy of going on and getting a PhD. So I had to obviously finish my undergraduate degree before then, but I just really went into business. And, you know, I was working with all of these, you know, I published a lot of scholarly books and, I, you know, really it was totally worthless to me, you know? So, of course, you know, there are certain things that you need to undergraduate degree for if you want to be like a medical doctor or something like that. But I think that with all of the new types of online education that are appearing, that, you know, in 5 to 10 years, the whole educational system will look different. So, you know, by the time that my son is old enough to go to college, it's all going to be different. And you know, education, it's also becoming very commoditized. And actually, it's always been a commodity. And the thing that I'm really interested in terms of, you know, the traditional view of education is like, how does it help you develop as a person and develop, you know, personal values and the ability to think about things, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I really believe those are important things. But it's a big question, like, how are people going to, you know, acquire that kind of education in the future? Because I don't see it coming from the traditional educational system now, because the humanities have really been destroyed from, you know, within. It's not just commercial pressures from the outside. It's, you know, stuff like, you know, deconstructionism and all of these ideologies, and everything is about, you know, gender and race and colonialism and blah, 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 blah. And so the humanities really no longer exist in the traditional sense that they existed in the Renaissance. So.
Absolutely. No, I'm 100% on board with you. No, I'm a big fan of the, you know, trivium and quadrivium type of learning. I'm sure you're familiar with. And, you know, I don't have children, but I've always thought that if I did, that I would try to educate them in that manner. I'm not sure how exactly. I mean, you could go online and you can find all this material. There is a thing that I'm a fan of. It's called the Trivium Binder that they've put out there. And it is kind of a curriculum, although not a, you know, technical curriculum, but it's different books and readings and stuff that you can go to learn grammar, logic, and rhetoric. And
oh, really?
And, wow. Oh, yeah. Yeah, if people want to look at it, it's a triviumbinder.com. And so that's one way you can do it. But yeah, it's funny. If you look back at, I'm most familiar with the United States, so I'll just use that as an example. There's a book called The Underground History of American Education that's absolutely fascinating.
Thaddeus Russell. Right?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's absolutely fascinating on this subject. And, you know, what he talks about is that, just like you said, in the Renaissance, it actually kind of, in the beginning of the United States, it was also, you know, the Enlightenment period, that it was also a emergence of this trivium type of education, and that a lot of people were learning that way. They would learn the Greek and Latin, and then this type of, you know, like I said, grammar, logic, and rhetoric, and then they would go on to be an apprentice and something like that. And they were pretty much done with that by the time they were 14. And there are people that are, you know, that we know of that we don't realize that in history they were like 16 or 17 and they're doing these amazing things. And so, you know, it's definitely an interesting way of educating. And I just thought of, you know, I'm sure that there's a way that we can kind of make this more fit some of the technology that we have into teaching this, but I don't think anybody's done that. So that's something that somebody's interested. They should definitely put something like that together.
Yeah, and you know, the Renaissance view was that the whole point of a humanities education was to lead to human flourishing, so that mm-hmm. not only individuals would become complete human beings, but they would be able to make a contribution to society. And if you look at the academic world today in terms of the humanities, it has nothing to do with society or making the world a better place at all. Mm-hmm. It's about becoming a more, you know, specialized, you know, scholar who will write ever more specialized articles that no one will read. So there is a really interesting organization called the School of Life. And they have a really interesting website, and they also publish some excellent books. I just read one recently by a fellow who's a philosopher. His name is John Armstrong, and it's called How to Worry Less About Money. And that book is really incredible. I highly recommend it, because he takes these traditional philosophical ideas and helps the reader think about money in terms of from a much, you know, deeper perspective. And I think a lot of people would find this to be helpful. And he's really doing the real work there, because he's showing how you can think about things in an analytical way that actually relate to real life issues and, you know, improve your life.
Yeah. You know, and what you were saying about how it's kind of, I don't know what's the word I want to use, but the type of education, you know, what happened is there was a split from what you're talking about, a liberal education to our liberal arts to servile arts. It was honestly called that. And that pretty much all of the quote unquote schooling that people have is under the servile arts, as in how to make a living and not how to live, you know. And,
right.
And before it was liberal as in freedom, liberal, liber, the
yes.
Latin word actually
yes.
means freedom. It's also tied
exactly.
into book. So, you know, you get your freedom from knowledge and from, you know, learning the quote unquote liberal arts. And now people are not learning any of that at all. They only learn the servile arts. So,
right. And, you know, if you set your mind to it, I mean, it's pretty easy to learn how to make a living, because there are so many courses and things like that. But people feel compelled to go to school. And I remember when I was a professor, you know, this was quite some time ago, but I spent quite a bit of time trying to really understand where my students were coming from. And so I asked them a lot of questions, and I would take their answers and put them up on the blackboard so we could compare all the answers. And, you know, I asked them, what do you think the American dream is? And do you think it's, you know, achievable? And why are you going to school? And, you know, what do you hope to accomplish? And one of the things that I learned is that most of the students actually didn't want to be there in school, and they actually even, you know, resented being there. And what they told me was that they felt that they had to go to school because when their parents were young, the economy was different and they could leave high school and get a good paying job and, you know, have the kind of lifestyle that they wanted. But everything is more specialized today. So the students in my classes, you know, felt compelled to go to school, even though they didn't want to, just because they felt that they had to do that in order to get a job. But if we, you know, fast forward now, like 15 years later, you see all of these people coming out of school with massive amounts of student debt, and they're unable to find jobs. And I really like what Taylor Pearson says. You had him on in the past, and I really enjoyed your discussion with him. But, you know, one of the points that he makes is that the more and more people who have college degrees, the more worthless they become, because, you know, it's just like another commodity.
Right. You know, and so we've come full circle here. We talk about how the modern day educational path is not what it used to be. And we've talked about how ridiculously expensive it is. You combine those two things and it seems more and more pointless to continue with it. So, you know, I noticed an article on your site, Brainstorm Every Day, which, and I wonder, where did the whole idea behind Brainstorm Every Day come from? Would you like to share that with us?
Well, actually, I got that from James Altucher, and he has this practice of writing down 10 ideas every day. And you may know of him. He wrote a book called Choose Yourself.
Oh, for sure.
And
I listen to him almost every day.
Actually, the last podcast, we were talking exactly about this subject.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And what happened is that I read his book, Choose Yourself, and I just loved it. It was really funny, and I agreed with everything that he was saying. And then I didn't try any of his practices, really, like writing down 10 ideas a day, but I liked the idea behind it. And then I found that like about a year ago, I started to actually become depressed because I was unhappy with certain aspects of my work. And I was actually feeling quite bad. I was feeling sort of like clinically depressed. And it was kind of nasty. And so I read his book again. And when I read it the second time, it made a big personal impact on me. And I started this daily practice of his, which involves, you know, writing down 10 ideas every day. And my mind just took off. It was really amazing. And I found that in the first month, I wrote down like 420 ideas.
Yeah, that's more than 10 a day.
That's more than 10 a day, yeah. Including the idea to start this website and to start all of these new businesses and things like that. And it really brought my mind alive. And I realized that one of the reasons that it makes you feel so much better when you do this is because if you're able to constantly generate new ideas on a daily basis, it feels psychologically as though your life is open and your future is open. And I realized that the source of my depression was actually this feeling that my life was closing in on itself. Mm. And when I started this practice, that totally went away.
Yeah, I'm looking at that article right now, 12 reasons to write down 10 ideas a day. And they're all so good and so important. We recommend that you go check that out at brainstormeveryday.com. But the one that is grabbing me right now is number 10, you become engaged in an ongoing inquiry on a daily basis. What does that mean to you, DR?
It means that you're constantly using your mind and thinking about things, because whenever you write down these lists of ideas, you're coming up with a particular theme. And so all of the ideas relate to a theme. And when you have that theme, you start asking yourself questions. So you're actually engaged in some kind of like ongoing inquiry, and you're using your mind the way that it's supposed to be used. For example, I wrote down several lists today and over the past few days. I'm looking at one right now. I wrote down three things you need to have a real business instead of being a freelancer. And I wrote down 17 segments for a course I'm creating on how to start, market, and run an online location independent service business. And then I wrote down 10 selling points for the course and, you know, things like that. And so you constantly keep your mind active.
Thank you for those recommendations. It's much better than 10 things I want to do this weekend or 10 recipes I want to make. Yeah, we can think bigger, can't we?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right. Well, this has been great. Dr. Feidler, brainstormeveryday.com. And you've written some books, too. How many books have you not only published, but you write some, correct?
Yes. I think I've written three, and I've edited a lot and things like that. So I'm using the name Dr. Feidler mm-hmm. for my kind of entrepreneurial activities and brainstorm every day. And, you know, if you Google David Feidler, then you can kind of see some of the other things that I've worked on too.
Very good. And you've done what people want to do. And, you know, unlike many people, it's popular today to say, and I respect the thought that, look, if you want to do it, just do it. Stop thinking about it. You took some time to think about it, and you gave yourself the time that you needed to get comfortable with actually relocating to Sarajevo, correct?
Not very much, really.
No.
I mean, I thought about it. You know, I was thinking about going somewhere, and I really fell in love with Sarajevo and the idea of living here. So when I came here, I was, you know, after I'd been here a few days, I was pretty sold on it.
I guess what I mean is you started the location independent business years before you actually made it, you know,
relocated. Yes.
Right.
And to be honest, when I wanted to have a location independent business, but when I started the business 10 years ago, no one was talking about location independent
right.
businesses at all. And so it took a few years after that for the 4-hour work week to come out and for me to actually realize what an incredible asset I had created because I could go anywhere.
And you also planned enough to have a girlfriend there before you even went. So that was pretty good.
Yeah, that was, you have to plan ahead and be proactive. Yeah.
Well, that's great. So, Dr., you have started many businesses and you have your location independent business now. You're able to live, you know, and you've made this move out to Sarajevo. What is your best piece of advice that you would give somebody that might be thinking of doing something similar?
My best piece of advice, one is to really get your marketing chops together because the greatest challenge that anyone faces in starting a business is getting good clients. And actually, one of the points that I wrote down this morning in terms of things that people need to have a real business is they need to have an identity, which is the business needs to have a name and a website. And really, if you're going to have a real business, you need to have a mailing list and also a systematic method for getting new clients, which is a marketing process. And the fourth thing I added was a high quality product or service, because without a high product, a high quality offering, you'll never get high quality clients. So you'll end up working for people you might not want to work with. And we now live in the internet age where people want to do everything online. But what I discovered with the business that I started is that actually the best way for me to get customers was to have a mailing list and send people letters and some really nicely made mailing pieces that I created, because when you have everyone doing stuff online, it actually makes a much bigger impact if you send something in the mail to someone, because they're not used to getting things in the mail anymore. So that was sort of like my secret weapon for starting this business that went from making zero, you know, dollars per year to, you know, up to, you know, grossing like up to $120,000 per year, is I created this business without, you know, calling anyone on the phone or doing anything like that. I came up with a formula for creating high quality mailings and then for following up with email like about 3 days after they received it. And I came up with a formula for that that worked very, very well. But the other thing that I would say to anyone who's starting a location independent business is that you just need to be patient. And you need to find a way to keep going until your business takes off. I heard one of the fellows that runs the Tropical MBA podcast say that it takes 1,000 days to start a business. And when I started my business, I started getting clients right away because I spent a lot of time making sure that I had really, really good marketing materials, a good website, good samples of work and things like that. But still, you need to be patient. And I think that the entrepreneur's, you know, worst enemy is having a lack of patience. And probably most entrepreneurs are actually like that in terms of their personality, because my book design business was a little slow to take off. And so I started all of these other businesses as well, which were also, you know, successful in limited ways. And, you know, I was getting income from them and things like that. But then finally, the book I got a very good client, and my book production business took off so that I have more work than I can handle. So if you have a successful business, what you'll find is that in the beginning, you'll be worrying about the fact that you don't have enough work. And then a few years later, you'll be worrying about the fact that you have too much.
All right. Well, excellent advice. We appreciate that. We've been talking with D.R. Feidler of Brainstorm Every Day, Create Your Own Opportunities, Design and Live Your Ideal Lifestyle. Thank you for being our guest today on the Borderless Podcast.
Great talking with you.
All right. Well, after reading that article, it was great to talk to D.R. Feidler.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And we've had him, you know, featured on the blog before, and you know, I hope that we can do some things in the future. We definitely have very similar messages, and he's able to make it work out there in Sarajevo. So yeah, it was great talking to him finally.
Thinking about relocating outside of your country of origin, thinking about running a business from there, D.R. Feidler did it. You can do it too. And if you go to his brainstormeveryday.com website, he gives you some great ideas for actualizing that. So let's see. We've got, I was just looking on, you know, Priscilla. We had Jason Wilkinson on the other day. His wife, Priscilla, shared an interesting article about opportunities in real estate in Ireland.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, you're talking about being able to get some of these homes for as little as $16,000 in some of these areas of Ireland. And I guess they don't look all that, you know, extraordinary.
That's 16 grand. I mean, what do you want?
You know? You can do something with it. Yeah. And Ireland is one of the only countries in Europe, from what I understand, who's actually trying to make it, you know, worth your while to relocate there tax wise, providing incentives and stuff like that.
Right. Well, that's interesting.
So there's an idea. Check that out. So, you know, the podcast has really been growing by leaps and bounds. We're getting more and more downloads every month. And we appreciate your ratings and reviews. So bop on over to iTunes. Leave a rating, leave a review, and we will, if you do that, we'll go ahead and read it on the air. And we've got the borderlesspodcast.com. If you go there, you can get involved in our private Facebook page.
Absolutely. Yeah. Come in. There's a button right there at the top, and you can take a quiz that will make it easy for you to see where your ideal place to live is. And then come and join us at the Borderless Network Facebook group. There's lots of people there from all over the world, people like David and others and ourselves that can help you if you're thinking about doing this. And then if you're really serious about it, we also have the Borderless Society, where we have calls every couple of weeks. And there's also a full course on how to do some of this stuff, like the mailbox, the traveling mailbox that he was talking about, and other things that are very available now, that and also a full forum with people that are doing this, and we can help you do this. So.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, and another Borderless Podcast will be coming up soon.
Thanks for joining us for the Borderless Podcast, traveling, investing, and living beyond borders.